All right, welcome everyone to Broad Street Hockey Radio here on April 13th, 2016, day before the Flyers start out in the Eastern Conference Round 1 against the Washington Capitals. We're excited to be here talking some hockey, talking some Flyers playoffs. What could be better? I am Kurt, one of your hosts for the evening here from Broad Street Hockey. Joining me is Charlie O'Connor. Charlie, how are you?
Doing good. Great to be back. It's been a while since we've done one of these.
Man, it's been too long. We're not good at sticking to the schedule here, but we're going to try. Hopefully this playoff run gives us a lot of opportunities to do it. We also have on the line Kelly Hinkle. Kelly, how are you?
I am great. Super psyched to be back doing this.
Mm-hmm. As am I. So let's just jump right on into it. Less than 24 hours from now, Flyers will be playing Game 1 of Eastern Conference Round 1 against the Washington Capitals. So the Capitals, of course, very, very good team. Ran away with the President's Trophy this year, had, I believe, 120 points in the regular season, way more than anyone else. And by all accounts, they are favored to win this series. It's tough to look many places and find really anyone who's expecting the Flyers to win this series. So I guess my first question, and Charlie, I'll toss this over to you first. How big of an underdog would you say the Flyers are in this series?
You know, it's funny. If you look at the most of the mainstream media, I know I had an article today that took a look at ESPN's predictions, and I think they had like 10 people picking the series, and every single one of them picked the Capitals. So if you go to the mainstream people, they're all going Washington, and then you go towards more of the statistical models, and they're a little bit more open to the possibility of an upset. And honestly, I lean more towards them, primarily because, and I broke this down in my article. I guess we'll probably be releasing this on game day, but so it would have been Wednesday's article. A lot of the statistical models tend to look at the last 25 games for each team, and for the Flyers, that's perfect because they've been playing their best hockey of the year over the final 2 months of the season. And by looking at the last 25 games, you kind of take out all of the bad games they had in the beginning of the year when they were really, really pathetic. So I think the Flyers, first of all, the Flyers benefit from that. But secondly, I think they should, because the reason why the models use 25 games is because the team is just more comparable at the time. And if you look at it, you know, if you look at the last 25 games, the team's roster over those games are going to be a lot more similar to the playoff roster in game one than they were in the first 25 games of the season, when you had guys maybe are now injured, guys maybe have been moved down the lineup or are no longer on the team due to trades. So for the Flyers, I think it makes sense to look at their last 25 games, where they've really been fantastic. Now the Capitals, on the other hand, there's a viable argument as to why shouldn't necessarily use the last 25 games to judge them, but for the Flyers, I think they're right there. I would say they're a slight underdog. Like, if the games were all at a neutral site, no home games for either team, I would probably say the Capitals are maybe like a 55-45 favorite. With home ice advantage, that probably jumps up to maybe like 57-58. So yeah, I think the Capitals are favored, but I don't think it's a blowout by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. I mean, that all sounds about right. I mean, I think like you said, the Capitals are definitely favored, but it's not surprising that the general sentiment is one sort of overwhelmingly towards the Capitals. I mean, they are the President's Trophy winners, but still, you'd like to see the Flyers maybe get a little more respect than they have been. I know, looking at, I think, the lines on every series, the Flyers are by far the ones that have like the worst odds to win, which, like I said, isn't too surprising, but you'd hope they get a little more respect. And the fact that the numbers models do point a little more optimistically, that's a good thing. Can't be anything but a good thing. Kelly, what about you? What do you think about where the Flyers stand relative to the big bad Washington Capitals in this series?
Yeah, I mean, like you, I would like to see them getting a little bit more respect. I was reading Down Goes Brown's first round predictions today, and he seems to think the Flyers would be lucky to get a single game against the Capitals. Listening to NHL Network Radio this afternoon, I heard them say that the Flyers would be the only real upset of the first round were they to beat the Capitals. I mean, we're not stupid. The Capitals are the better team on paper. They're the better team on the ice. But the better team doesn't always win in a seven-game series in the NHL playoffs. That's what makes them so fun. And I think the Flyers are kind of riding a couple of players who are super hot right now. And if they remain that way, I'm pretty confident that we could steal this one. I'm feeling pretty good about it.
That's what I like to hear. I like the optimism. I like it. We got nothing else this time of year. So because, I mean, obviously we are a little more optimistic here than probably the average hockey observer would be for the Flyers' chances. Some of that is probably we're homers, but you know, I think there's good reason to be. So I guess my next question on that, in that sort of vein, is what's one thing that, that a lot of people think that one area of this series where like a lot of people think the Capitals maybe have an edge, but in reality, they may actually not. So, like, one thing where, like, people say, oh, the Capitals are better there, but if you look at it a little closer, maybe they may not. Like, one place where the Flyers may actually, like, be even with them or maybe even have an edge. Go ahead.
Yeah, I in all honesty, and I think this will probably surprise some people because Braden Holtby is – I would say the favorite at this point to win the Vezina Trophy for best goalie in the NHL, but I don't think the Capitals have a big advantage in goal.
Oh, Charlie, you totally scooped me.
Sorry, Kelly. But I really don't. I don't necessarily think the Flyers have the advantage, but I don't think the Capitals are dramatically better in goal, if better at all. What you have to realize about Holtby is that he had an amazing start to the year. He was absolutely fantastic, you know, riding the best save percentage in the league. But this isn't October or November. This is April. And over the last 3 months, Steve Mason's been a better goalie. And we've talked a lot about this year, Mason being very good at 5-on-5 and not being so good on the penalty kill. But if you look at the numbers starting in January, so I think starting in February, for Mason and Holtby, Mason has a 92.15% save percentage since the start of February in all situations. Holtby's at 91.14. So even accounting for the idea that Mason may not be as good as Holtby on the penalty kill, and I'm not even sure if I buy that. That may have just been Mason having a poor start on the penalty kill for a lot of possible reasons. But even if you buy that, Mason's been the better goalie for the past 2 months pretty much over Holtby. And this is the third straight year Mason's been really good. I don't think it's unrealistic to think Mason outplays Holtby in the series. I really don't. I think it's a toss-up either way. But if you listen to, you know, a lot of the national media people, they would have you believe that Braden Holtby is this, you know, unstoppable brick wall, and Steve Mason, at least according to certain people on, you know, NBC Sports Network, is good, not great. I think Mason, he doesn't even necessarily have to, but if he can replicate what he did against the Rangers 2 years ago, the Flyers have a really good shot at stealing this thing.
Yeah, that's probably the most obvious one, Steve Mason. Like, I mean, any Flyers fan, anyone who's listening to this probably knows he's done incredibly well here for 3 years, and I think a lot of the national media, even despite watching that series against the Rangers 2 years ago, and even despite seeing him be awesome last year and this year, still hasn't quite caught up. But is what it is. There's one other thing that I wanted to bring up that I've seen talked about a lot. It's sort of a big part of what the Capitals are in a lot of ways. But you see in a lot of these previews, they bring up special teams and they talk about how, you know, the Capitals special teams numbers like are way better than the Flyers, both on the power play and the penalty kill, and how that doesn't bode well for the Flyers' chances. And I mean, on the whole, that's probably true. I believe the Caps were top five in both power play and penalty kill percentage on the whole year. Excuse me. However, what's really interesting is, like, if you look at what the Caps penalty kill has done since, like, the All-Star break over the last couple months, or the Caps power play, excuse me, over the last couple months, it really hasn't been very good. I believe the numbers were, I think since the All-Star break, they had about a 16% conversion rate, which is almost it's bad for any team. That's almost unfathomably bad for a team that has the amount of offensive firepower that the Washington Capitals have. And like that, that was surprising to me when I saw that. And I mean, it isn't just a factor of them pounding away at the net and just getting unlucky. Like their shot rates in that time, if I remember, were pretty middle of the road. So that's just something that you see talked about a lot because, I mean, Alexander Ovechkin, everyone thinks of him just firing away from that right circle on the power play, scoring every other game. Because, I mean, that's just what he does. But if you look at what's actually happened in recent months, that's not how it's worked out. Meanwhile, the Flyers' penalty kill is has been rounding into form over the last couple months. Charlie, I believe, wrote something about this last month, a few weeks ago. And, I mean, we all saw. I believe the Flyers only allowed three goals on the penalty kill in all of March. And I mean, that says a lot about how much they've come around this year. And I mean, it's crazy to think that the Flyers may actually have an edge in terms of like their penalty kill versus the Capitals power play. And that's not something you're going to see said much out in terms of like overall analysis of this series. But if recent play on both sides is any indication, I think there's a pretty good case to be made for that. And if the Flyers can hold down that Capitals power play, like that's huge because, I mean, that is where you'd think they do a lot of their damage. They've got the horses to do damage at 5-on-5, but the power play is usually what puts them over the top. And if they're not able to do it there, then that's a big help. All right, so we've talked a bit about where the Flyers may actually be able to sort of sneak up on the Caps, surprise them. So now let's sort of, I guess, shift this a bit. Where's an area in which the Capitals What's one area, I guess, in which the Capitals definitely do have an edge on the Flyers?
Well, I think the easy answer is defense, because that's the Flyers' weakest area. So, I mean, it's our guys are really going to have to lock it down. We can't have a lot of Nick Schultzing going on out there with Alexander Ovechkin and TJ Oshie and Justin Williams flying around. It's not going to be good for us. So I think the easy answer is that they're going to have a better defense than us, which is not really a high bar to clear.
Definitely agree with that. And I think the biggest potential issue that can arise due to the fact that the Flyers don't exactly have the strongest back end in the world is the Capitals really love to get in on the attack with possession of the puck. They like to move through the neutral zone with speed, they like to blast in, immediately take shots, which makes sense. You look at the guys they have. Alex Ovechkin is a, you know, like 6'3", 240, and he's one of the better skaters in the NHL. You know, Kuznetsov is a great skater. Backstrom's a good skater. Burakovsky's a good skater. Like, they have strong forwards who can just, you know, push the play with ease. And the Flyers have a lot of defensemen that sort of just let that happen. Kelly mentioned Nick Schultz. We've talked a lot about Andrew McDonald and his amazing ability to just back up and let people into his own zone with no real issues whatsoever. Mark Streit has been better in the second half, but he's definitely lost a step. And Radko Gudas isn't particularly fleet of foot. So one of the big things that's going to, in my opinion, decide the series is if the Flyers can slow down the Capitals in the neutral zone. And a positive sign for the Flyers there is that in the first three matchups this season, the Capitals basically just ran train through the neutral zone. They were blasting through. They were getting way more controlled entries than uncontrolled entries, and they carry the play in all three games. The fourth game is a different story. The Flyers held them to like a sub 40% controlled entry rate, which I haven't watched every Capitals game, but I'm guessing that doesn't happen very often. If the Flyers can repeat that and can make them play dump and chase hockey, not to say that the Capitals wouldn't be good at that. They probably would be. They're a big team up front. They're strong. I'm sure they're capable of winning puck battles, but I'm always one to make a team, you know, make an opponent play the way they don't want to play. You know, take them out of their comfort zone. It's almost like a Bill Belichick style, where, you know, he wants to take away your best option and make you have to beat him with
they're your second best receiver or something like that, beat you you have to beat him the way you're not used to beating a team. And if the Flyers can make the Capitals play dumb and chase hockey rather than beat them on the rush, they have a shot. They have a really good shot. But when you have guys like Nick Schultz, Andrew McDonald in the back end, it may be hard to succeed over a 7-game series.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's just a ton of firepower on that Capitals lineup, and it's not surprising they're a team that can just fire up and down the ice through the neutral zone the way that they can. And it's going to be tough to deal with, but they didn't get 120 points by accident. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come right back and talk about a little bit more about the Caps top six and how it matches up with the Flyers. All right, and we're back here on Broad Street Hockey Radio talking Flyers-Caps, game one coming up tomorrow night. Before the break, we were talking a bit about Washington's top six, their lineup, how good it is moving through, moving across the ice, moving up with speed, how much power they have in that lineup. And it does seem like a lot of that, almost all of it really, and I assume we'll get to their depth issues later, but a big part of that is what's concentrated in their top six, their top two lines consisting of Alex Ovechkin, Nick Backstrom, and then TJ Oshie is usually the third guy on that top line. And then they've got usually Andrei Burakovsky, Evgeny Kuznetsov, and I believe Justin Williams on their second line. That's a top six that very, very few teams, if any, are able to match up with in the NHL. And it's a group that the Flyers had some problems matching up with during their four games with the Capitals this year. Charlie, you wrote a bit about that today and yesterday. So you want to talk a bit about how those teams met, about where that group gave the Flyers trouble?
Yeah, I don't think it's possible to overstate just how good Washington's top two lines are. Top to bottom. Obviously, Alexander Ovechkin is amazing. He's one of, in my opinion, the three best players alive right now. But add in, you know, Nick Backstrom, who's clearly a top line center in this league. He's at least top 10 in the NHL when it comes to centers. Kuznetsov has had a huge breakout season, and then, you know, even the other guys, it still kind of ticks me off how Washington was able to steal TJ Oshie and Justin Williams last offseason. How they got Oshie for Troy Brouwer, I'll never know. And then how they were somehow able to get Justin Williams signed to an under $4 million cap hit for only 2 years when he's been one of the best puck possession players in hockey over the last five or six seasons. That blows me away. But they're really tough to match up against. And the biggest issue the Flyers ran into was the Giroux line didn't play very well against Backstrom in pretty much all the matchups. Giroux's unit and it's fluctuated. He's had Voracek on his line at times. He's had Shannon Simmons on his line at times, but they really didn't play very well against Backstrom. And that was compounded by the fact that Sean Couturier missed two games. He missed, I believe, the two middle games of the series, one of which the Flyers won in overtime, one of which they lost in regulation. But Couturier being out hurt them a lot, because Couturier in his career has done a pretty good job of matching up against Ovechkin. Just watching the games from up in the press box is mostly because when Couturier plays against Ovechkin, he just spends most of the time on the attack. It's not that he's doing, you know, something amazing defensively against number eight. It's just that number eight doesn't have the puck very often when Couturier is on the ice. And you know, really, in a lot of ways, offense is the best defense, especially against a guy like Ovechkin, who's so electric with the puck on his stick. So not having Couturier for two of those games definitely hurt. But that's not the whole story, because, you know, even if Couturier comes back and does a bang-up job slowing down Ovechkin, the Giroux line still needs to play against probably, you know, the Kuznetsov line for a significant period of time. And if there is as underwhelming as they were in the four-game season series, the Flyers are going to have trouble, because Kuznetsov, while not as dangerous as Ovechkin, I mean, who is, he's pretty darn good. And he's more than capable of being the best player in a series if Ovechkin gets slowed down a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't I don't think that – I think Sean Couturier is another one of our guys like Steve Mason who doesn't get quite enough respect for being a real factor, kind of a quiet factor in games. And not having him those first two games against the Capitals, I think, skewed kind of what you're going to see as these teams match up over a seven-game series. And another thing that I kind of wanted to ask you, Charlie, we didn't have Ghost for, I think, the first two games against the Caps this year?
I think it was just the first game, actually.
Just the first game? Okay. Do you see him being a big factor?
I think he has to be. You know, just watching the way the Flyers have played with him versus without him, it's like night and day. You know, from the time he came up, the Flyers went from being, you know, really a dumpster fire into being an actual competitive team. And then in the last maybe 30 games of the year, they became an actual threat rather than just decent. But yeah, I think Gostisbehere is going to be he has to be a difference maker if the Flyers want to have a chance. I looked at the entry data that I tracked for the four games against the Capitals, and Ghost actually had the best neutral zone score of any Flyer on the team against the Capitals, which is a good sign. Now, the bad sign is that his defensive zone score was absolutely horrific. So it's a small sample, and usually those defensive and offensive zone scores, they tend to, you know, regress back to a reasonable number over time. But, you know, it's possible that he could struggle a bit in the defensive zone against the big Capitals. They're a big team. They certainly have the ability to kind of box out a guy like Gostisbehere, who's definitely on the slight side. Mm. So that's a concern, but at least in the neutral zone, he was an impact guy, and you know, he did what he usually does, which is, you know, force them to dump the puck in, you know, drive with control with the puck up and take it on the attack. He's a dynamic player, and I'm sure the Capitals are going to game plan for him, because how could you not? He's really the only guy on that defense that's worth game planning for. But do I think he's going to have an impact? I think he better, because if he doesn't, then I don't think the Flyers have much of a chance. But there are some positive signs in how he played. He'll just need to make sure he doesn't get taken to the cleaners in the defensive zone for his pairing, which he's definitely the better of the two defensemen on his pairing with Andrew McDonald. You know, he'll need to hang in there in the defensive zone for the team to drive play when he's on the ice.
We know for sure that the lineup is the same as it was against what it has been for the last couple weeks, right? Like in that basically was what it was against Pittsburgh.
You mean the Flyers lineup?
Yeah.
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, I guess there's a possibility that they could swap, that Hextall could swap Lawton in for Cousins. But aside from that, you know, I don't, unless he was really, really impressed by that Evgeny Medvedev goal in the meaningless game 82, I highly doubt he slips in. So yeah, I think we pretty much, this is pretty much what we've got at this point for the Flyers.
Yeah, and I mean, you know how coaches are. When team keeps winning with the lineup, it's going to stick that way, which, I mean, can complain about it, can like it, but I mean, it is what's going to happen. And I mean, like we've said, Flyers, even with Andrew McDonald in their lineup, have been a very good team for the last 2 months of the season. So I mean, it's not going to change. It's just not going to change.
So we talked about the top six, but I think if the Flyers potentially have anywhere where they can exploit the Capitals, it could be against the Capitals' third and fourth lines, potentially with the Flyers' third and fourth lines. The top six for the Capitals is pretty much as good as it's going to be. And really all you're looking to do is match them if possible. The bottom six for the Capitals, on the other hand, it's not terrible by any means. Like, it's not like they're a liability, but there are certain pieces on that bottom six that aren't really all that impressive. Kurt, Kelly, you guys have any thoughts on that?
Charlie, Tom Wilson is a first round pick. Show some respect. Sorry, what were we talking about? Okay.
Tom Wilson, anyway. you mean not Tomas Hertl or Teuvo Teravainen? Not them, who were taken right after Tom Wilson?
No, nope, not those guys. No. Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting group. I mean, you mentioned in your article this morning, I believe, the Capitals do get a lot of credit for having a ton of depth up front, but it does really seem like that's a product of them, of their top six just being so overwhelmingly good that they just keep hitting you. And you take that to mean their whole forward lineup is good. It's not that it's a bad bottom six, but it's not, like you said, it's not a great group. They've got Marcus Johansson, a guy who I like, a guy who can score. He is a guy who, like, yeah, could be a second line center on a good team. We know this because he was the Capitals second line center for a few years. And yeah, he's right now he's playing more like a third line center, but by no means a bad player. And then you've got guys like Jason Chimero, who's getting up there in age, is a bit slow, isn't much of a possession guy. You've got your Jay Beagle, who I don't think the Caps are trying to put him on the top line anymore. I know that's been a thing for them for a long time, but I don't believe they're going to do that in the playoffs. Our old friend Mike Richards, who, of course, they picked up in the middle of the year, been pretty good, or pretty good for a fourth liner. I mean, obviously, a lot of his scoring touch has fallen off a bit, which, I mean, it's a shame, but is what it is. But for a fourth line forward, he's fine. You could do a whole lot worse. I believe, yeah, they picked up Winnick, who's pretty good. Again, a lot like Mike Richards, good as a fourth liner, not really someone you want doing a whole lot more than that. And there's Tom Wilson, who, I mean, Caps fans love the guy. He hits really hard. And that's pretty much all he does. Takes penalties, doesn't really score a whole lot. And yeah, I think Charlie said correctly today that he's the one guy who, if you're a Flyers fan, you don't really mind seeing him on the ice. So yeah, I mean, like you said, a decent group, but by no means one that's like that you look at and say, "Holy crap, that's a bottom six right there." And is that one that the Flyers can like get after? Is that one that like the Untouchables can beat? I don't know, Kelly. What do you think?
Yeah, I was actually just going to bring up the Untouchables. We talked for a second about the possibility of Lawton being swapped in for Cousins. And obviously we call them the Untouchables for a reason. Hakstol is obviously very unwilling to break up that line. And for good reason, they've been pretty solid. But given that we're in the playoffs now, do you think it would be a good idea to maybe swap in Lawton for a guy like Vandevelde or White or someone else who maybe doesn't bring the offense?
I think it'd be a cool risk to take. I know why Hakstol hasn't done it yet, or at least he did it briefly after Vandevelde got suspended, and that lasted for like a game, and then Vandevelde came back in and Lawton came back out, and well, it's pretty much been in the press box ever since. But yeah, I think it certainly could be worth a shot. And it's one of those moves that you maybe could see happen if, say, the Flyers go down like 2-0 in the series and it's desperation mode. We gotta get some offense in the lineup, whatever. I think the reason why he'll be hesitant to do it is that I can't imagine Belmar gets benched. He's pretty much been the fourth line center all year. So that leaves Vandevelde and White, and Vandevelde's been pretty good on the penalty kill this year, and White's kind of carved out a role as the net front presence on the second power play unit. Now, could the Flyers be better served putting Lawton in place of one of them and just taking the hit on the power play, maybe using Raffel as the net front presence? Is White that much better than Raffel to keep a superior player in Lawton out of the lineup? Yeah, probably not. But I can understand the thought process behind not wanting to mess with the special teams, because both Vandevelde and White have, you know, have a role there. I'd like to see Lawton find his way back in the lineup somehow, because I think he does have, you know, an extra offensive touch. He's one of the, I think, five forwards in the Flyers with a controlled entry percentage over 50%, which tends to imply he's got some legitimate offensive skill. So I'd like to see him slide down somewhere in the bottom six. But in all honesty, where I think the Flyers could really have an edge, and where it might be like the most underrated aspect of the series, is that third line. What's probably going to be the Nick Cousins, Sam Gagner, Matt Reed line. Kurt wrote a great article, I think, about a month and a half ago, basically making the case that line's improvement has been a huge reason for the team's possession improvement over the past, you know, 2.5 months. And the Flyers might legitimately have a better third line than the Capitals, considering Matt Reed's a great neutral zone guy. Nick Cousins has been surprisingly solid. And then Sam Gagner has really turned his season around after spending some time in the AHL. And I'm really intrigued to see what Gagne does, because he's a guy who spent pretty much his entire career with the Oilers. He's never seen the playoffs. I want to see how he does on the big stage. I think he's a guy who really could get really, really jacked up for this playoff run. And if he needs any extra motivation, he's on the last year of his contract, and not really sure the Flyers are going to re-sign him. So if he goes on a little scoring run, he can make himself a lot of money. Maybe get himself a long-term deal after, you know, being parked down in Lehigh Valley for about a month earlier on in the calendar year. So I'm excited to see what the third line does. I think there's a real opportunity there for the Flyers to take advantage of some weakness in the Washington bottom six.
Yeah, the Sam Gagner first time playoff story is really cool. I mean, I remember hearing it 2 years ago when the Flyers made the playoffs in that series against the Rangers, hearing about Luke Shen, because that was his like fifth or sixth season and his first time getting to the playoffs. And Gagner has been around. This is what, his eighth season in the NHL? And like it's crazy. I mean, spent 7 years in Edmonton, that'll happen, but still crazy to think he was, I think it's they said the third most had played the third most games of any active NHLer. Was it active NHLer or all time? I don't remember, but a lot of games without a playoff berth. And you have to imagine he's going to be coming out like guns a-blazing in this game on him Thursday night. Okay, so we're going to take another quick break, and then we'll talk a bit more about this series and maybe a bit about the rest of the NHL playoffs. All right, we are back on Broad Street Hockey Radio this Wednesday evening, day before the Flyers take on the Capitals in Game 1. However, as we are talking right now, there are some other playoff games going on right now. Two of the other Eastern Conference series are in Game 1. The Red Wings and Lightning are in the second period of their game, while the Rangers and Penguins are in the first period. It's a pretty interesting bracket, both in the East and the West this year, so before we get back to Flyers Caps, we're going to take a quick break from that and talk about some of these other series. So, Kelly, we'll start with you. What's one other series outside of Flyers Caps that you're really excited to watch?
In the East, I'm really excited to see the Rangers and the Penguins beat up on each other. I really hope it goes seven and they absolutely destroy each other. I would like to see maybe the Earth open up and swallow up the Console Energy Center so that no one wins this series, but since that's probably not going to happen. Yeah, I mean, whoever comes out of it, I don't really care. I kind of hate them both equally, but it'll be kind of fun watching them beat up on each other. And in the West, I'm pretty excited to watch San Jose and Los Angeles. I think that's going to be a really fun series.
Yeah, it's always fun to, it's funny. I don't really hate the Rangers that much, and I think that kind of makes me like a minority among Flyers fans. But
I
kind of root against them on principle because they're a New York team. But there's always just been a lot of players of the Rangers I like. For example, with Henrik Lundqvist, like, have you ever seen the movie Forgetting Sarah Marshall when Jason Segel's like about to get really angry at Russell Brand in the ocean? He's just like, damn, you're cool. I should hate you, but you're just too awesome. And kind of the way I feel about Henrik Lundqvist, like I really should dislike you, but like, you're just great at everything and I have to respect you. And whereas the Penguins, I can't stand. So like, it'll be very easy for me to kind of jump on the Rangers bandwagon for however long the series goes. So that'll be fun, and it'd be fun to like actually root for guys like Lundqvist and Ryan McDonagh, who I really have always felt bad for because he's chained to Dan Girardi for like the rest of his life. Although I guess McDonagh's hurt, so he might not play very much, but still, I guess on principle, I still feel bad for him. But I guess the series I'm most looking forward to watching is in the West. It's the St. Louis Chicago series. For a couple reasons. Number one, I'm like a huge, huge Vladimir Tarasenko fan. He's probably my favorite non-Flyer in the league right now. And I really enjoy the heck out of watching him play. He's just such a dynamic scorer, has an amazing shot. He's a good skater. He's just a ton of fun to watch. And I've always liked the Blues, to be honest. I like a lot of the guys on their team. I like their defense for the most part. Colton Parayko's been
been surprisingly solid this season as a rookie. And then, you know, obviously, you know, Pietrangelo, Bomeister, Shattenkirk, all those guys. But I'm looking forward to that series too, just because of like the narratives involved. The Blues are a team that kind of has the reputation of playoff chokers. And they come into the series actually playing a lot better than the Blackhawks, who obviously have the reputation of these, like, you know, playoff gods and next dynasty and everything. Plus, I've kind of grown to the point where I enjoy rooting against the Blackhawks about as much as I enjoy rooting against the Penguins for totally different reasons than the Penguins. There are certain guys on that team I really dislike, and I'm just kind of sick of seeing them winning. But this it's basically a series where I really like one team and I really dislike the other team, so it'll be very easy for me to get into that one. Plus, it should just be a fun series because there's a lot of talent on both sides. So it'll be good hockey to watch, and it'll be one for me to easily, you know, jump on the bandwagon of another team.
Yeah, a lot like you, I enjoy watching the Blues. I think that should be a fun series. It's funny because, like you said, on the one end, there's been a lot of talk lately about how the Blackhawks look about as vulnerable as they have at any point in the last like 5 or 6 seasons, which is crazy to think about. And I mean, you feel crazy betting against them because, I mean, they're the Chicago Blackhawks. They don't really lose in the playoffs. But on the other hand, in our predictions on the site, I picked Blues in 5. So, I mean, I'm clearly going against that grain. I don't even know if I believe in that. But I guess we'll see. And, yeah, that San Jose LA one should be really fun. I mean, it's crazy that we're getting a sort of redo on 2 series from – it was 2 years ago in the first round. We got both of those series, Blues Blackhawks and Kings Sharks. Both were really exciting series. Of course, the Blackhawks won in that series in 6 against the Blues. Whereas in the San Jose LA series, of course, San Jose went up 3-0. Then the Kings won 4 games and ended up winning the Stanley Cup. So we'll see if that, I don't think that will happen again. It seems like a lot would have to line up perfectly for that to be the case. But it should be interesting. I feel like people are sleeping on the Sharks a little bit. But they're, and that may just be because people have been talking about LA and Anaheim all year. But yeah, I mean, those Sharks are really good. Joe Thornton would maybe have a case. I've seen people say he would have a case for the Hart Trophy. Even taking into account great seasons the guys like Kane and Sidney Crosby have had. And I mean, it would be not, I like that Sharks team. I like the guys on that team. It would be cool for them to win some game, like to win in the postseason, so guys like Joe Thornton could shake that choker label that's followed him around his whole career. But I don't know. It should be fun. That'll be a really fun series either way.
Yeah, I would absolutely love to see Joe Thornton win. He's really likable player and personality, and it kind of sucks that he's never been able to be on a team that's put together a run. I have a kind of a follow-up question here for you guys. So earlier I was saying how I heard this afternoon the talking heads on the NHL Network radio station say that they thought that the Flyers would be the biggest upset of the first round were they to beat the Capitals. Do you guys agree with that? And if not, who do you think would be the biggest upset?
I would say, I mean, I get why they said that, like we've talked about President's Trophy winner versus team that snuck in on the last weekend of the season. Like, I get why you're going to say that. With that said, I feel like the one team that I don't think I've seen literally anyone pick them, like anyone, maybe outside of their fan base, is Minnesota going up against Dallas. And that's just, I could see a scenario in which Minnesota wins that series, but it would basically require Dallas's goaltending imploding, which could happen because they're not very good. But otherwise, I think I would have a really hard time seeing – that's the only way I can see them winning that series, because Dallas can outskate them. They've got – their defense isn't great, but it's at least like high event and exciting, and they can score with anyone. They'll give up goals, but I mean they've shown all year. They give up goals, but they'll score more. So, I mean, that to me is the longest shot in the first round, more so than the Flyers, definitely. And I acknowledge I'm a homer in saying that, but that's what I think. Charlie, what about you?
Yeah, I agree with you that Minnesota would be a big shock. One of the things about Minnesota is that if you buy the whole how you're playing at the end of the season, momentum thing. I think Minnesota lost their last five games, and they were kind of in a playoff race during those games. They just happened to be battling against Colorado, which imploded even worse than they did. So it's not like Minnesota's coming in strong. I think Zach Parise has a good chance of missing the entire series. So, yeah, I'd be really surprised if Dallas lost that one. But I, in all honesty, I'm going to go with the only series I picked as a sweep, which, granted, I picked it before I found out that the Penguins are going to be starting Zadkov in goal over Fleury or Murray because they're both hurt. But the Penguins-Rangers series, to me, it's basically Henrik Lundqvist versus everybody. You're talking about a Rangers team that was I think yesterday we're saying they were going to match up Mark Stahl and Dan Girardi as a pairing against Sidney Crosby. Like you're just basically begging them to kill you. And as I said before, I like Lundqvist a lot and I'd like to see him take over the series, but I just don't see how they can hold up against the Penguins over a 7-game series. I don't know. I could be wrong. But to me, that would be the biggest shock, and I understand why you're not a huge underdog in the media, because obviously the Rangers have been good for a while. They made the Cup Finals 2 years ago. Last year, they went on a bit of a run. But looking at the way the Penguins have played over the last 2 months, how good they've been under Mike Sullivan, and then how struggling the Rangers have been, really all year, they've been a pretty poor possession team. Basically leaning on Henrik Lundqvist being pretty much the god of goaltending right now. I just don't. They're possibly the worst possession team in the playoffs, and they're going against the best possession team in the Eastern Conference over the last 2.5 months. I think it would take a miracle for them to come away with the victory.
Yeah, that all sounds about right. For those who are listening, we're recording this on Wednesday night, and the Rangers have actually outshot the Penguins in this first period by a pretty substantial margin. But it looks like Lundqvist got hurt and then came back right on, and the Penguins scored and are up 1-0. So even when things are going right for the Rangers, you can see how it might be tough for them to win this. I'd like to give, before we get back to the Flyers, I want to give one other shout out to a team I was high on coming into this year, very high on. I, in fact, thought they were going to win the Metropolitan Division, and now they're playing the Florida Panthers, and this team, who, of course, the New York Islanders, I have a really hard time seeing them beating Florida, because Florida has been, they were a team that I think a lot of people were skeptical of. Like, they were winning a lot early in the year. People were like, how are they doing this? I remember their possession numbers weren't great, but they've made some changes. They picked it up. They got some guys at the deadline who were pretty good, and they're playing good hockey right now. And like I said, the Islanders, not that I'm a fan of them or anything, but like I said, I was high on them coming to the year, and they've been disappointing. And they're coming in, I think, with some injuries, but even then, it's really, really hard for me to see them winning that series against Florida, which is crazy, but that's one other one that comes to mind as far as big upsets. What would be a big upset for me?
Yeah, Florida made some good moves at the trade deadline. I think that was a big reason why they've gotten so much better. Their front office did a great job improving that team, and I know they got Kendall from Detroit, and they picked up a couple forwards, I believe, as well. The names are escaping me. But I know that a lot of their improvement can be attributed to them just getting a lot deeper up front and on the back end. So, you know, props to that front office. They I don't think they really necessarily went all in, but now they're a real threat. And with Tampa Bay missing Stamkos and Anton Strahlman, you know, they might even be the favorite to come out of that Atlantic Division mess of four teams that are left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, remember there were rumors they were interested in Michael Raffel, and thankfully for us, that didn't happen, because otherwise we may not be here recording this episode. But yeah, they clearly went in, and I mean, good for them. That's a team you want to see take some risks, you know, really secure that fan base, draw interest in that area, and that's really cool to see. I don't know how good they're going to be. I don't know how far they're going to go, but that'll be interesting to watch. So back to the Flyers. You know why most of you are listening to the show. Let's toss one question around, and then we'll get to our predictions for the series and for game one. Who would you say, we'll start with you, Kelly, who would you say is one player who maybe could really surprise the viewership both nationally and in Philadelphia, and one guy who may need to in order for the Flyers to win this series?
I think, see, because I want to say, you know, there's a lot of obvious answers here, like a Ghost or maybe Shen could have a good series. But I'm going to say that we're going to really see Jake Voracek come alive during this series. He's had a bit of a slow season, been moved around a bit over the course of the season, trying to get him going. But I'm going to say that he is going to break out, and he's going to score a bunch of goals, and we are going to win games, and it's going to be awesome. Because, it's obvious that he's gotten to a point that his hair and beard have taken on a life of their own, so they may score independently a couple of goals. I think Jake is going to break out. That's what I'm looking at.
Yeah, I kind of hinted at this earlier, but I like the idea of somebody on that third line really, really stepping up, maybe in heavy minutes against, you know, the Johansson, Chimera, Richards line. It looks like they're going to throw out there. Specifically, I could easily see Sam Gagner having a real impact run. Surprisingly enough, and this actually shocked me when I was looking at the numbers, as sporadic of a season as Gagner's had in terms of being scratched, being in the minors, I think he got injured for a little bit. He actually played in all four games against the Capitals, which is weird to me because the games were scattered, but he played in all four games and basically broke even in the neutral zone and had over a 50% controlled entry rate. So I could see him having a good series, and I'm still holding out hope that Matt Reed is going to wake up one day and remember that, hey, I actually have a good wrist shot and I can score goals. Like I do all the little things right, and I'm still a useful player, but like, I can score sometimes too. And, you know, maybe this is the series. Maybe this is the time when Dad Matt Reed wakes up and remembers that he's a 20 goal town and goes out there and does it. That'd be cool.
Yeah. You know, Sam Gagner breaking out might be the most fun version of this to happen, just to see him go full, like, animal crazy his first time in the playoffs, just really come alive. That would be a lot of fun to watch.
I would love to see that for sure. I guess I'll chime in because you guys have mostly been talking about forwards. I'll jump in on a defenseman real quick. 2 years ago, and I mean, granted, it's been a long 2 years for this guy, but 2 years ago, Mark Streit was a guy who, in his first year with the Flyers, started slowly, got progressively better as the year went on, and ended up being really the Flyers' best defenseman in the last couple months of the season and into their playoff series against the Rangers. And I think that if the Flyers want to win this series, he's going to need to keep being good. I mean, we've seen Radko Gudas, against all odds, is when he's not trying to kill people, has had a very good year for the Flyers, and whatever pair he's been on has been pretty good. I mean, Shane Gostisbehere also, even with Andrew McDonald, has been a pretty solid defenseman. That other pair, the Mark Streit, Nick Schultz pair, has had its downs, but when we last checked in on them sometime in mid-late March, they were doing pretty well. Like, their possession, like, they're been getting the closest to tough minutes that the Flyers have had, and they've done well in those minutes. And that, for that pair to work, Mark Streit needs to do almost all of the puck moving. And I mean, can he do that? I mean, that's a big question. And if he can't, that pair becomes the weak pair for the Flyers. But if he can, then there may not, much like the rest for the cap isn't for the Capitals, there may not be a real weakness for the Flyers on the defensive group, which is crazy to think about. But yeah, so I would say a lot will come down to him. And if the Flyers win this series, it would almost require him having a pretty good 4-7 games. All right. So we're going to take our last break here. And then once we come back, we'll jump on into predictions. All right. And we are back on Broad Street Hockey Radio, talking Flyers Caps, and it is time for the moment you've all been waiting for, our predictions for this series and for Game 1 of the series itself, because that, of course, is taking place on Thursday night. We, of course, posted our series predictions on Broad Street Hockey earlier today on Wednesday. So we'll start with those. We'll start with the whole series, so sort of go around the ring here. Kelly, you were the one out of us, not only the one out of the three of us here who took the Flyers, you were the only one on the website to take the Flyers in 6 games. That's so right. Tell us why that's going to happen. I love the optimism. Let's okay. Do this. Tell us why it's happening.
It's infectious, so get ready for it.
Hell yeah.
So here's what I'm saying is going to happen. I think that the Flyers are going to steal game one because the Caps aren't going to be ready for the fire that we're bringing. So there's your one. I think that Washington comes back and wins game two. I think that the Flyers win both games in Philadelphia just because that's fun. And wait, that's four games, right? Yeah, so then they'll probably lose the next one in Washington and then win in game six. I have actually no reasons for thinking that this is how it's going to happen. It's really just what I want to happen. And so I'm just going to put it into the universe and hope that it takes hold and actually comes to fruition. I leave the analysis to you guys.
Well, hey, look, we're all homers here on the inside. I mean, yeah. almost all of us called like seven games for the series. And I feel like if you look most places, you're not even going to see that. Nope. So on that note, Charlie, you called Caps in seven. As did I. So, Charlie, if you want to,
because you guys are worst fans ever.
Yeah, we're just truly bad people. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know what? Hang on. We're having some issues here. So I'll make my predictions now. So I also called Caps in seven, and I guess here's why. The Washington's really good. Like we've been talking about. What may be working in the Flyers' advantage, where they may even like have outright advantages, and where they could sort of sneak up on Washington. But like, Washington's a really good team, and even if they haven't quite looked the part of the Death Star in their recent games, and even though the Flyers have looked a lot better, I think you sort of need to look at, like, if you just look at their roster and look at the one the Flyers are icing this week, it's like there's more talent.
Yeah, I tend to kind of have a similar thought process as Kurt, to be honest. And it's funny, I came into doing my analysis for the series pretty open to the possibility the Flyers could pull the upset. And really, before I started to really delve into the numbers and the team and the roster and the styles and whatnot, I was leaning towards picking the Flyers in seven. But, you know, the more I looked at the rosters from top to bottom, and also, you know, what it is that Washington likes to do on the attack, this just doesn't seem like a great matchup for the Flyers. I noted earlier tonight that, you know, the Capitals really like to create a lot off the rush. The Flyers ideally kind of slow things down. You know, they play a lot of cycle games, a lot of dump and chase on the offensive side, and then in the neutral zone, they try to slow you down and force you to play dumb and chase as well. And I don't think they can force the Capitals to do that for a seven-game series. I think overall the Capitals are going to get their rush game going. They're going to get guys like Ovechkin and Kuznetsov, you know, in on players like Nick Schultz and Andrew McDonald. At the same time, I think it's going to be tight. I think it's going to go seven games. What I keep going back to, and I kind of hinted at this in my article about the playoff models and the reason why the stat people like the Flyers and the media people tend to, you know, be gung-ho about the Caps, is this Capitals team reminds me a lot of the Flyers team in 2010, 2011. Like a lot. Granted, that Flyers team didn't have the same ceiling as this Capitals team, whereas the Capitals were just by far the best team in the league in the first half, and pretty much, you know, every metric that wasn't totally possession related, like power play was great, their goalie was great, their shooting percentage was great. But the Flyers that year weren't all that different. I know, I remember Bobrovsky was fantastic in the first half. He was a big surprise. The Flyers' shooting percentage was through the roof. Their possession numbers were good. They weren't amazing. They were solid, and they took a big lead in the Eastern Conference. And then near the end of the year, they tailed off. And I remember having the same conversations that with Flyers fans then, the Capitals fans are having now, where, oh, well, they'll get it back going in the playoffs. They're not as motivated now. And then they went and they had a seven-game series against the Buffalo Sabres and nearly lost it. And yeah, they came out and they blew out the Sabres in game seven. But the Sabres were really not that much different than the Flyers. They were a team kind of playing a little bit over their heads. They were executing well. They had a goalie that was playing great in Ryan Miller. And they took them to seven games. And then the next series, the Flyers went against the Boston Bruins and got swept, which, quite frankly, I think could happen in round two when the Capitals would play the Penguins probably in round two.
So what you're saying is then 2 months from now, the Capitals trade Alex Ovechkin
and
Nicklas Backstrom. That's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, you know where I'm going with this.
Sorry to interrupt, but, continue your actual thoughts.
Exactly, but yeah, that'd be certainly interesting. But I kind of envision the Flyers playing the role of, you know, the plucky Buffalo Sabres in this one. I expect Steve Mason to play really well. I think Mason is going to outplay Holtby. I believe that Mason is going to keep the Flyers in a lot of games where they get outplayed. And I think most of the games are going to be tight, mostly because Mason is going to play very well. I have a lot of confidence in Steve Mason, a lot of confidence in the way he's played in the second half of the season. And just have a lot of confidence in him as a goalie. And I think he can kind of cut down the gap, at least to the point where this goes seven games. And in a game seven, truly anything can happen. But I do think in the end that the Capitals' superior roster is going to win out. I think the Flyers match up okay from a forward standpoint, but the Capitals, you don't really say forwards against forwards. You more say forwards against defense. And the Capitals' forwards, the Capitals' top six against the Flyers' defense just to me seems like too big of a mismatch. And in the end, I don't think Mason's going to cover up enough of that to give the Flyers the edge. But I do think it'll be a close series. I think it'll go six or seven games at least.
I just want you guys to know that I'm not going to mock you publicly when I'm right and you're wrong.
So, Kelly, if you're right and we're wrong, like, you effing go at it. Like, go hard.
Okay.
We all want to be wrong, except you. You want to be right. Yeah. Okay, so that's the series. But if you're listening to this on Thursday, game one is tonight. So we'll jump into our predictions for game one really quickly. Kelly, you said the Flyers are going to win game one. Tell us why and or how that's going to happen.
It is going to be Flyers, 3 goals. Capitals, 1 goal. Steve Mason is going to stand on his head. Ghost is going to score, Jake is going to score, and Wayne Simmons is going to score in that order, and it's going to be awesome.
Love the specifics. Charlie, what do you think is going to happen on Thursday?
Now I have to come up with like a whole narrative, too. I can just give a score. Kelly just kind of put me on the spot here.
Chuck, the most important thing in sports is narratives, so I can't believe you didn't have one prepared.
Always have the narrative prepared. Well, I guess I'll go with I'll say the Flyers will lose if I'm saying they're going to lose the series. In terms of a narrative, I'm going to say the Flyers start out weak. They go down early, and then they storm back in the third period, tie things up, and then lose in overtime. Say 4-3 final score. But then I think they'll come back and they'll win game two. So I'm certainly not saying that that the Capitals are gonna take both home games.
Mm-mm.
So almost played it out when we were talking like that Flyers Rangers series did 2 years ago. I'll also say the Flyers lose game one. I think that I don't like saying that, but I think that both these teams, for various reasons, I mean, beyond the fact that, I mean, it's the playoffs, they're gonna come out really hard. I think they're just going to be firing all over the place. Could be a bit of a shootout. And I think that kind of game favors the Capitals. So did you say 4-3? Well, I can't say 4-3 now. Let's say 5-3, not because of anything Steve Mason does bad, but it'll be like I said, I think it'll be a bit of a barn burner, like high energy game. And when that happens, and like I said, if that style may sort of favor the Caps a bit, but I also think that they come back to the Wells Fargo Center tied at 1-1. So all they got to do is split these first two and they'll be in a pretty good position. So they get one of them. I think that's good. All right. So
agree about that. I think they're going to split too.
Let's hope. All right, so that is it for this episode of Broad Street Hockey. Thank you for listening. We're going to hope to do this a couple more times during the playoffs. Hopefully the playoffs are nice and long, so we get plenty of chances to do it. But if not, again, enjoy game one. We've got a lot of content on the site about the series, previewing it, looking at the matchups, looking at the Capitals. Feel free to read up on all that before tonight's game, and we'll have plenty more after game one and after every game, so, but you know that already. All right, so again, thank you for listening. Have a good night. Go Flyers.